the J-Talk Podcast.
Yosh.
Hello and welcome to the J-Talk Podcast. Ben Maxwell and Sam Robson with you. Sam, great to have J1 back as we work our way through Golden Week and some goals on show. But once again, in the ACL, it's been a very mixed bag for the J1 clubs.
Well, it's been madness, the ACL. I'm still not getting it in my head around permutations. I don't know if we helped anyone in the last episode. And yeah, it's all gone wild since then. But yeah, it was great to have a bit more normality, I suppose, with the J-League back. And it was a very good round, lots of very good goals. Leandro's back with a bang. That was a particularly great goal. But yeah, all excitement. And the most important thing is I've overtaken you in the fantasy football.
I thought you might mention that. Yes, I've had a pretty ordinary week, so maybe it was the jinx of the fantasy show last week. But yeah, that's afflicted me. Well, yourself and Alex have gone all guns blazing in match day 10. Alex is up to fifth, I think, and yeah, you've zoomed past me, Sam. So that didn't take very long at all, did it? So yeah, well, now you've got to play the hunted rather than the hunter. So we'll see how that pans out in the next few weeks. But yes, it was an eventful match day 10 with the seven games that were played over Thursday night, and then most of them on Friday, when it was quite wet across most of the country. But before we move on to all of that action, again, we'll try not to confuse you too much with what's going on over in the Asian Champions League. I said a mixed bag, Sam. It was for Kawasaki Frontale supporters, who obviously have a checkered history with this competition to begin with. Well, I mean, I can't imagine the emotions of the Frontale supporters seconds away from topping the group, and then in a barnstorming finish, finding out that their team was eliminated.
Oh, who knows? It was an absolute roller coaster, and who knows what they were going through. It was bad enough just for me watching it. I mean, Kawasaki did their job. They beat Guangzhou 1-0. It wasn't very convincing, and going into added time, the other game was 1-1. That would have allowed Kawasaki through as group winners. And it was just madness. The JDT also injury time, both sides hit the post, both sides going for it, because if it was a draw, both sides were going out at that time. But then JDT, the ball into the area, the usually reliable goalkeepers had a couple of mistakes in this tournament show, punches up in the air, Ulsan can't clear their lines, ball comes back in, it's an own goal from Ulsan, eliminates them, eliminates Kawasaki. Great for JDT, but yeah, heartbreak for both Kawasaki and Ulsan. They might argue that the format has gone against them again. Last year they won their group and then faced Ulsan, the two best teams in the tournament in the groups last season, met in the last 16. This time they finished second, but they are the worst second team in the competition, so they have been eliminated. And yeah, another failure, I suppose, at this level for Kawasaki, and it's that tournament that just keeps eluding them.
Yeah, it's another year has gone by, and it's another year of another missed opportunity. And, well, in the cold light of day, yeah, it's a failure. I don't know if there's any other way to slice it. It was obviously a huge slice of fortune that went JDT's way to see them go through as group winners. But, I mean, you know, you make your own luck. And as you say, both teams had to go for it, with a draw being no good for either of them. So, you know, we can't take anything away from them. And I think overall for the competition as a whole, having a Malaysian club go through at the expense of a Japanese and a South Korean superpower is, it's got to be good for the reputation and the overall competitiveness of the competition. But yeah, Frontale, when they, you know, sit down and try and reflect on this, it's a tough one, isn't it? Because, as we've said, they were seconds away from finishing first and making it through to the knockout stage. But at the end of the day, it's a failure. So, I mean, they haven't got enough points in some of the other crunch games, I suppose, Sam. And that's what they'll look back on and have some regrets about.
Yeah, I think they might look at it and think they're quite unfortunate to go out in this way. But to be honest, performances against JDT in that 0-0 draw and the two games against Ulsan just weren't good enough. They didn't deserve to go through based on the way they played. They turned it on once, beat JDT 5-0, but couldn't manage it for the rest of the tournament, and they have run out of get out of jail free cards, which they've been using quite liberally so far this season. Yeah, it was just they've obviously you have to rotate, and I think it does show now that that second string team at Kawasaki, which once was so strong when you had all those players that have left in the last couple of years, but now it is quite weak. They're not really, even against Guangzhou in that last game. Guangzhou, it's the kids team really, and Kawasaki really struggled to get anything going in that game as well. So yeah, very disappointing performances from Kawasaki. They'll have to refocus and go into the league and lick their wounds. But yeah, this was a poor campaign for them in general. And although they were so close to going through, I think they absolutely, and same with Ulsan, they both deserve to go out, and JDT deserve all the plaudits. I thought, from the most part, except for that Kawasaki 5-0 defeat, they were fantastic and deserve their place in the last 16.
Yep, terrific stuff then. So, yeah, second place wasn't good enough for Kawasaki in Group I, but it was for Urawa in Group F. Daegu of South Korea have topped their group, but yeah, Reds make it through to the knockout stage as one of the best second place teams. And yeah, their spot fairly well deserved, Sam, over the course of their six match days.
Oh yeah, definitely. They were, I think even against Daegu, where they lost the head-to-head record, but I thought they were the better side in both games there. And then they beat Lion City quite comfortably, 6-0 in the last game they played them. I think they beat them 4-1 in the first, had no issues with that third team in the group, where Daegu struggled against Lion City. And Lion City did play quite well in general, but yeah, Reds just dismantled them in the two games they faced them and easily dispatched with Shandong. So there was never really any doubt, I don't think, with Reds. They'll be cursing the head-to-head rule that means they finish second, so theoretically have a more difficult tie in the next round. I mean, we can try and figure that out if we want, but we might be here all day trying to work out those permutations. But yeah, they were very comfortable at Reds, and there are better signs in this competition after the shaky start to the league campaign.
Yeah, most definitely. And yeah, you're dropping in and out there a tad, Sam, so I'll obviously do my best to stitch it all together in the editing room. But if there's a slight problem for the listeners there, we do apologise. But yeah, hopefully the connection between us on the Skype will pick up throughout the course of the episode. But also making it through to the knockout stages are Vissel Kobe. They wrapped up their group stage play just before we started recording on Sunday night with a 2-2 draw. And that means that they have topped Group J. There is one more group stage fixture to be played as we record, as I say, on Sunday night. And that is a crunch game between Junbuk and Yokohama F. Marinos. F. Marinos currently sit top of their group, but are not guaranteed to make it through, despite that fact, the crunch clash coming up against the Junbuk. So you'll know, listeners, the result of that game, and therefore who will be playing who in the knockout stages of the ACL by the time this podcast is released. So at the moment, we know that Urawa and Kobe are through, and yes, we're hoping for we're sending positive vibes to F. Marinos ahead of their final game against Junbuk, and hopefully they can make it 3 from 4. But yes, we know that Kawasaki are definitely out. So we'll wrap up the group stage, I guess, Sam. We can't give F. Marinos a final grade yet because they're not complete as we record. But yeah, Kobe obviously just having to play the 4 games. Have you seen progress throughout the group stage? And do you think Mr. Latina has put this time away with his squad to good use? I noted that the returning Yoshinori Muto got on the score sheet, giving Kobe a late 2-1 lead in their final game against Kichi before they were pegged back just before the end of the 90 minutes. But overall, have Vissel planted some seeds for a positive return to J1 action, do you think?
No, I don't think I'd go that far, to be honest. I think Muto coming back obviously is great for them and getting on the score sheet. They'd absolutely need him. But it's been an interesting group, really, because they've kind of basically been through anyway, because Chiang Rai were really poor. They beat them 6-0. Then they've had the two games against Kichi. I thought Kichi played very well in both of them. Kobe were a little fortunate to win the first one. This one, it was still a reserve team, really, so that's fair enough, I suppose. And it was a 2-2 draw. It was quite even. And they drew with their Chiang Rai in the previous game. So it's been a fairly comfortable group for them, but they haven't played very well, and they've just about done enough to get through as the group winner. So, yeah, I'm not seeing anything that's going to lead me to be too excited about Kobe, but I suppose the confidence of winning a group is going to help, and he's had a few weeks to work with them, but I think the real test will come when they come back into J-League action next week.
Yes, most definitely. All right, so speaking of that, let's just segue on to the seven games played in J1 match day 10 over the first couple of days of Golden Week. So, yeah, it began on a Thursday evening with Iwata hosting Nagoya. We'll come on to that game later. Then, the other six games are all played on Friday. And I guess the headline act was Kashima Sam, who rose to the top of the table with a 3-0 away win over Cerezo Osaka. Unsurprisingly, Yuma Suzuki was in the thick of things as Antlers raced into a 2-0 lead inside the first 15 minutes.
Not a surprise at all. He was absolutely everywhere. Once some more, and Kashima, I thought, played very well in attack. They're so fluid with Suzuki and Ueda, and they can bring in so many options as well. The wingers in this game were Izumi and Matsumura, who's come in. Matsumura as well had a fantastic game, and nobody sits to their same those positions. You can see Suzuki up front, he'd drift over to the left, he'll drift to the right, the wingers will swap over, and there's so much movement, and it's so difficult for the defender them. And then they had a stronger midfield as well. They finally moved Kento Misao back into midfield alongside Higuchi, and they absolutely dominated in that area. There's still question marks about them defensively. I think Quansante bailed them out a few times in this game, but yeah, Kashima, against what has been a difficult opponent, Cerezo, they've not given anyone an easy game so far this season until this one, and then Kashima really swept them aside, and they're fully deserving of going top of the league at this stage.
Yes, can't really argue with that. And yes, it was Yuma Suzuki, as we said, at the thick of things in the early going. He headed in from 6 yards after Kim Jin-hyun saved Yuta Matsumura's shot. And then Suzuki returned the favour, a crossing from the left and Matsumura sliding in to steer home a volley. His first goal of the season in his first start. Tremendous young player, and great to see him get the opportunity to start, and he more than made the most of it. Cerezo, they did try to get back into it. Mutsuki Kato clipped a shot just wide in the 20th minute, and then 8 minutes into the second half, Seiya Maekuma hit the post after Antlers failed to clear a corner. But yes, Arthur Kaike wrapped up the points in second half stoppage time when he fired in after Yuta Higuchi found him in space in the box. And that was probably the least celebrated goal I think I've almost ever seen, Sam. I don't know. I guess both sets of players were just completely shattered. And Kaike almost didn't. He looked a little bit disappointed or embarrassed to score. It was just, I guess that's his bread and butter. He finishes those in his sleep. But there weren't too many over the top celebrations at that third goal for Antlers.
Yeah, I guess he must score them in his sleep because it was a belter of a goal into the top corner. If it was me, I'd have done many a lap around the pitch. But no, apparently that's just another day at the office for Arthur Kaike.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. All right. So, yeah, you're right. Cerezo, they haven't really they haven't laid down for anybody this season. And, I mean, they did battle on here again. But, Antlers were far too good. And, rose, as we said, to the top of the pile. Now 2 points clear of Frontale and 4 ahead of F. Marinos. And, now at this point in the season, all 18 teams have played 10 games, and indeed after the next round of fixtures coming up on Friday, coming up on Tuesday, again Golden Week getting me a bit confused here, the ACL clubs will all have a game in hand that they'll have to make up later on. So there is the prospect, Sam, I suppose, of Antlers being 5 points clear of Frontale by the time the defending champions return to J1 action. So it'll be slightly unfamiliar position for Frontale to play the role of the hunter rather than the hunted.
Yeah, absolutely. They've barely been there second, have they, in the last few years. But you can see them being 5 points behind. Kashima have got a home tie against Jubilo midweek. They'd expect to win that, which obviously means Jubilo are going to win. But it's going to be interesting to see how Kawasaki because they're going to have to bounce back from the disappointment of the Champions League. Then if they're 5 points behind in the league, have they got that confidence to go on and reclaim their top spot? Yeah, it's a position that they've not really been in. The only season really that they've been off the pace was 2019, where they didn't even get into the top three in that season. So, yeah, it's an interesting one, and we're going to see how mentally they can bounce back from that, because, yeah, the performances so far aren't carrying them through. They've just been getting by with results, but now they're going to have to step up their game, because Kashima are proving that they're going to be a real threat to both Frontale and Marinos for this title.
Yes, most definitely. All right, so next we'll head to the National Stadium in Tokyo, where a bumper crowd of over 43,000 bared the very inclement weather and watched their team put on a half-decent show, at least at home against Gamba Osaka. Tokyo running out 2-0 victors that saw them rise to fourth in the table. So I guess the most surprising thing about this evening, Sam, was that Tokyo managed to score a J1 goal after a three straight 0-0 draws. It was pleasing, at least for me as a Tokyo supporter, to find out that the players remembered where the goal was.
Yeah, it was about time, because it's not been great. It was back to Hasegawa days of the 0-0s and me not wanting to watch FC Tokyo. So yeah, it was a little bit better. This one, you got almost your Otridente back. They didn't all play at the same time, but it's good to see that they're all getting fit. And yeah, you get those three together. I think they're the ideal three for what Awapuchi wants to play. I mean, Connor has done well and Nagai has worked hard. But I think, yeah, those three up front are really the strongest players. And Leandro, I mean, he came back after injury and it didn't look like he'd been away. And the goal he scored, I mean, I know I've skipped ahead to it, but it's been difficult not to, because just the way he controls it in the halfway, runs 45 yards towards goal, beats about three or four Gamba players, holds them off and then puts it into the top corner. It's one of the best goals you'll see this season. It's an early front runner for me for goal of the season. Yeah, again, I know I've skipped ahead, but it's just a fantastic goal. And it really lit up the game because, yeah, it was a great occasion around the stadium. Great attendance from both sets of supporters. They made it a real show, the fireworks, everything. But the game itself didn't quite match up to everything that was around it. And Gamba were quite poor and Tokyo weren't quite hitting their strides. They did get their goal through a Dalton, eventually a bit scrappy after Henrique hit the crossbar. But yeah, it needed something to light it up, and Leandro absolutely did that.
Yeah, I mean, what a way to mark your return to action after he hadn't played since match day one, the defeat away at Kawasaki. And then, 2 minutes after coming off the bench, basically, ran half the length of the pitch with Dawan trying to pull him down for about half of that journey. And then, he sent Genta Miura for a nap on the floor, and then, rifled past Jun Ichimori. So, he's definitely a missing piece to the Tokyo puzzle. There's no question about that. But to score a goal like that 2 minutes into your return is, I don't think even in his wildest dreams he could have expected to pull off a goal like that. And then, he thought he'd made it 3-0, and all the Tokyo supporters did as well in the 76th minute. But then the latest installment of VAR drama after a player is bundled off the ball 30 yards from goal. Sam, we've seen them given and we've seen them allowed this season. Previously, F. Marinos had been victims on both sides of the equation. And this time, it was Tokyo's turn after they had had a goal stand in their league meeting against F. Marinos. This time, Kensuke Nagai was ultimately deemed to have fouled Miura, despite the referee obviously having a perfectly good look at it in real time, and deciding that was nothing amiss before Nagai squared for Leandro to tap into an empty net. But after about a 3.5 minute delay, the goal was ruled out. And then Gamba had their wasn't really drama, was it? Although it did take almost a couple of minutes to confirm that Patrick was offside when he headed in from a free kick in the 82nd minute. So overall, a grand occasion for Tokyo. Obviously, the weather didn't really cooperate, but it was great to see such a large turnout in the first league match for Tokyo at the National Stadium. And Yeah, a Dialton got the icebreaker, didn't he? Yeah, as you said, 7 minutes before half time. But I don't know. I think it was Hiroto Yamami that kind of sparked the game into life a couple of minutes earlier when he curled a shot just wide for Gamba. The first half had just kind of happened until that point. I don't know whether that woke Tokyo up, that Yamami shot, or not. But from there, Trevisan, as you say, headed against the bar and Dialton blasted in the rebound. Then, I'm watching this game through red and blue tinted glasses, Sam. But I must admit, I was quite disappointed in Gamba. It seemed like just a general lack of sharpness from them. You know, balls were bouncing off their players. They weren't really didn't really appear to be at the office and right on top of things. It could have gone a lot different, obviously, if Dawan's shot had gone in rather than cannoned off the bar 4 minutes into the second half. But yeah, overall, Tokyo were decent enough, and yeah, Gamba was slightly disappointing for me.
Yeah, they've been off it most of the season, to be honest. And with Osami out all season, it's very difficult to see where their creative spark actually comes from. Karata has been out for three games as well. And they've tried to change it up. They played Leandro Pereira from the start instead of Patrick. Issa Sakamoto's had a couple of runs out, but nobody's really been able to grasp a game. I mean, they've had those moments like Yamami there, but that you mentioned. But generally, they were restricted to shots from outside the area, quite speculative. Yeah, it's a great goal if Dawan goes in, but it's not like a clear-cut opportunity that they should be scoring. And really, I think they had one towards the end where Slovic, as he does, makes an incredible save. But if they're only testing him once or twice, I mean, Slovic's always going to make it one or two great saves a game. And they just didn't create enough there. As I said last week or the week before, they're trying, because they were so all over the place defensively, Captain Osaka has tried to kind of solidify that. And generally in this game, they were still okay defensively and they have been better, but it really restricts them going forward. And when they are without creativity anyway, to then restrict that even further, I think that, yeah, they're really not getting anything going. And Leandro Pereira tried. He looked quite busy, but not sharp. And, yeah, really struggled. So, yeah, it's worrying for Gamba because I don't really see an option for them that's going to spark them into life and really grab the game by the scruff of the neck. They don't have that sort of player. And, it's a difficult one for Katen Saka. I think he's just going to have to make his team difficult to beat and just try and grind out results because they don't have the quality at the moment to really take on a team and grab a game by the scruff of the neck and go on and assert their authority.
Yeah, just didn't quite go for them. And as I say, they weren't at their sharpest. And that added up to a Gamba supporter could push back against this. But yeah, ultimately a fairly comfortable, I think, Tokyo victory. And 2-0 was just about the right result, I think, on the evening. Although, as you say, you said there, Sam, yeah, Slovic's late save from Leandro Pereira's header when he basically falling backwards and he just slapped the ball away from the goal was kind of the weekly incident of Slovic coming to Tokyo's rescue. And from a Tokyo perspective, great to see a couple of goals go in. And Adalton and Leandro, well, they're two really important players to the Tokyo attack. So good to see them back on the score sheet again. All right. So, Tokyo rose above Kashiwa Reysol in the table. Reysol, Sam, suffered their third straight league defeat. This one, a 4-1 hammering at home at the hands of Sagan Tosu. So, Reysol were excellent in the early going and still sit fifth in the table despite these three straight defeats. But is this the start of the inevitable slide down the table for Reysol, and they're just going to be thankful that they banked those 16 points so early doors, do you think?
Well, it's looking that way at the moment because they were dreadful in this game, and it's like, has the real Kashiwa Reysol now stood up? Because they were really poor. They didn't get anything going defensively. I thought they were atrocious. I mean, the first goal, that it's a long throw in, it's very basic. And Mitsumaru, for whatever reason, he's 5 yards behind the rest of his defence and playing Fuji Honda on. The second goal, another free kick. It just allows to go at like knee height through the 6 yard box. Nobody deals with it. So, yeah, that was dreadful. I think they were quite poor going forward. They've got no Koyamatsu in this game, no Douglas again. And I think they're a team that are based on about 3 good players. And 2 of them weren't playing in this game. So they really struggled going forward creatively. I think Muto came back from injury. He got a few things going. He got an assist through a mishit shot, which is kind of summing up the way that Kashiwa were playing. So, yeah, this was really poor. And it gives me hope that my JPED relegation predictions aren't quite dead in the water just yet.
Well, yeah, as I say, I think they're just going to be thankful, aren't they, that they had that purple patch at the start of the season. And, for example, they're 7 points better than Shimizu are at the moment, and they're 10 points ahead of Shonan. Obviously, we expect Kobe to right the ship somewhat, but, 10 games in. I mean, yeah, we've been expecting that since the start of the season, and it hasn't happened yet. So they still have to, I guess they have to prove their mettle all over again. But, it would be a long way for Raceholt to fall. But it's, as you say, yeah, their form has been pretty ordinary. And this was arguably their worst performance of the year, the 3 straight defeats. Fuji Honda, great to see him on the score sheet again. He has got the opener in the 27th minute. Then Masaya Tashiro made it to 2-0. On the stroke of half time, 10 minutes into the second half, Mao Hosoya, as Sam said, Muto's shot was miles off target, but was steered home by a just onside Hosoya to reduce Raceholt's arrears. And then, Muto really should have made it 2-2 on the hour after Hosoya's shot was parried by Park Il-gyu. The rebound was lifted over by Muto when he surely had to at least hit the target, but maybe he can blame that on rustiness. And then, Tosu took advantage of that let-off, and, Fuji Honda scored the opening goal, and then he provided the assist for the 3-1 when he, squared across the box, and a terrific first-time finish from Akito Fukuta made it 3-1. Fukuta had actually headed on for Honda's opener. So, Honda was happy to return the favour, I'm sure. And then Fukuta, who was one of the main reasons behind Alex Bishop's huge rise up the FJL table this week, got his second assist of the game to go along with his goal when his ball to the back post was headed past Kim by Nanase Ino. So, Tosu, Raceholt, we're expecting them to fall away, Sam, but Tosu, they've got previous, obviously, and they're up to 6th and above a lot of other big names. But, again, it looks like they're going to have some stickability about them this season if they keep turning in terrific performances like this.
Yeah, it does look like it. I think they've been written off 2 seasons now by me, and they're proving me wrong once again. They've managed to, again, find a core of players that just really works together, and the likes of Honda coming back into it. They've still got really good players. Nanase Ino as well, they've kept him from last season. I think he offers so much down that right-hand side. And defensively, they're pretty solid. Kwang Shoko came back in for this league game. I think he is a very key component of that, because maybe Diego at centre-back is not necessarily that comfortable there. He's primarily a full-back, and Tashiro has always been an OK player but kind of needs a bit of help with him. So Huang has really settled that back down. They look solid enough. They are they play football very well. They've got the ball down. They've got some lovely interplay. They're very difficult for anyone to kind of keep track of all the runners. It's such a fluid system. And, they've got players that fit it well. They all work really hard, and they're doing very well. There's not much I can say negatively about Sagan Tosu. And, just they're getting the best out of what they have. And full credit to the manager and this kind of scouting system they must have there, because they don't have a lot to operate with. They had to replace a load of players from last season, but they have picked out unheralded names, but it has all really worked, and it is clicking for them. So, fantastic for them, and, hopefully that continues for them.
Yeah, absolutely terrific. Keep it up, Fuchi. You're absolute Bobby Dazzler. Love it. Love to see it. All right. So, great win for Tosu away at Kashiwa. Another really important away victory came at Kyoto, where Fukuoka, goal shy, I should say, call them by their correct name, goal shy Avispa Fukuoka, rocked up to Kyoto. Obviously, the Kyocera Stadium was bouncing after Sanga's terrific performances throughout the month of April. But the home support at the Kyocera Stadium, well, they were handed, I don't know, Sam, a bit of a reality check by a Fukuoka side who we know are very apt at frustrating teams defensively. But after going so long without a league goal themselves, Avispa made Kyoto pay, and a terrific Jordi Crooks cross in just the 12th minute was met by a lovely cushioned header from Yuya Yamagishi, and that turned out to be the difference between the two teams.
Yeah, it did. It was a lovely ball in from Jordi Cruz, what he's good at, and Yamagishi just kind of ghosted in between the defenders and finished from close range. And it was a terrific goal, but it was a game where Kyoto had a lot of possession but really didn't create too much from it. I think Avispa, they did this well last season where they get a goal in front and they know are allowed to sit back, and they really are solid. I mean, Groly and Nara did very well on Peter Utaka, who's had the run of every defence he's played against this season, seemingly, but not against the Vispers. And yeah, it was just, I don't know if it is complacency at all with Kyoto, because they've lost three times this season. The Tokyo one, yeah, fair enough, against a Tokyo, a good side. But the other two are Jubilo and Avispa, two teams they would be expecting to beat. Yes, there were extenuating circumstances against Jubilo, but they were still 1-0 down before their red card. And in this one, they didn't have that period of play where they created a lot of chances and they really took it to them. There were a few. I think Araki towards the end really should score to equalise, but there were few and far between. It was relatively comfortable for Avispa, and that's not been the case for most teams when they come up against Kyoto this season.
Yeah, it was for Sanga, I guess it was early and late, their two key chances, right? I mean, as you said, with the Dawan shot for Gumba, I mean, a blast from distance. I mean, it's obviously fantastic if they go in, but I mean, the XG on those sort of shots aren't particularly high. So yeah, Shohei Takeda's shot from 30 yards in the second minute, I mean, it looks absolutely fantastic if it goes in, obviously, but he was unlucky to see it come back off the post. And yes, with 6 minutes to go, Daigo Araki simply has to at least hit the target from 6 yards when he slid in, managed to bundle wide, and that ended up being Sanga's last chance of the game. So for Fukuoka then, they'd obviously struggled in the recent match days and were desperate for any sort of a win. For them, I guess this is a trademark result for them, and as you say, Sam, like something that they made a habit of doing last season, grinding out a 1-0. For them, just any 3 points was going to be precious on this occasion, and it's see them up into the relative comfort of 11th in the table with 11 points from 10 games. But they've risen up a number of spots after this result, so it wouldn't take much for them to sink down again. But yeah, we don't want to pee on their parade. That was a very important victory, and Yamagishi, a terrific goal, and they were able to restrict Kyoto, and indeed, as you said, Peter Utaka, when a lot of teams in recent times have been unable to do that. So well done to Avispa, and well done to Daiki Suga, Sam, who, if Leandro's goal is a contender from FC Tokyo for goal of the season so far, then, there's certain football supporters who are, big fans of the sort of goal that Suga lashed in the 52nd minute of Sapporo's home game against Shonan. This was a goal that also proved to be the match winner in a 1-0 home win for Sapporo. It's one of those where you hope you make sweet enough contact, Sam, and in Suga's case, he well and truly did. A corner was headed out to him about 25 yards from goal. He controlled the bouncing ball and sent a left-footed volley arcing away from Corsetani and into the net. An absolute peach, and a goal worthy of winning any match.
Oh, absolutely, and the game probably did need it, to be honest. It was a game struggling for quality, but not when Suga picked up the ball. Great technique on it, just to, as you say, arc it away from Kosei Tani, and he had to hit it perfectly because Tani was having a very good game, saving most things that were coming near him. But yeah, it's kind of what Suga does occasionally have in his locker. He doesn't do it too often, but he has got these belters in him, and this was a fantastic goal. I think I just side with the Andrew on if I'm doing a goal of the month competition at the moment. But yeah, this was a lovely goal and a good victory, a needed victory for Sapporo. Thankfully for them, they're not drawing the game. But as we spoke about a couple of weeks ago, this was one of the games that Shonan would be targeting to try and get out of the relegation zone. And they've fallen short again. They really didn't create too much. I think there was a Machino chance that was very comfortably saved, but otherwise they didn't take my advice. They didn't go launching balls into the area and causing problems. They tried to play their football, which I guess is to be respected in some circumstances, but it didn't really work. And if you can't create chances against Sapporo and the way that Sapporo defend, then I think they're in a little bit of trouble. So they've got a big game midweek. Shimizu at home, that becomes even more important now.
Yeah, most definitely. Yeah, really disappointing afternoon for Shonan. They had the ball in the net just past the hour, but yeah, Machino was offside in the build-up and the goal was correctly chalked off. I think it was Yuki Ohashi that ultimately fired it home, but correctly disallowed. And Suga's goal, as we said, yeah, worthy of winning any match. And it was an absolute tremendous effort and a much-needed 3 points as well for Sapporo. That is now them three games unbeaten, two of those games being victories, and they're up to 10th in the table and their usual mid-table obscurity. And for Shonan, they've definitely got a lot of work to do, as we knew. Even if they had won this game, they still would have been inside the bottom three. So it's going to be a long season for the Hiratsuka club. There's no question about that. All right, so we've got two games left to review, and they involve both of the Shizuoka clubs hosting. It's ended up a mixed bag for them, but Iwata have managed to defeat Nagoya in the game that began the round, Sam, on the Thursday night. They were a few minutes away from a 1-0 defeat after Mateus's goal 2 minutes before halftime. But then a mad 65 seconds saw Yuki Otsu bag a brace and Iwata emerge with the 3 points. And the Yamaha Stadium faithful were absolutely bouncing.
On every right to as well. I mean, this isn't the first time that Jubilo have just hung themselves into games, not really necessarily played that well, but then they've had that burst towards the end and they've caught teams cold, and they definitely caught Nagoya cold here. I mean, we've talked about Kobe a lot this season, how they're struggling, but Nagoya have to be looked at because they're a point above the relegation places. They were in complete control of this game, and just defensively, they were absolutely atrocious, and I don't see how it was possible to take a Ficcadenti defence. The same players are there. They know how to defend, but now they apparently can't do the basics. This corner, no one picks up Otsu at the near post, and KSM to on the post. I mean, he should never work on the post again because he leaves his position. And then he kind of backs out of it when he has to head it clear. It's just awful, awful defending from Sento. And it wasn't the first. They'd had a few moments like that. There was a header from Grasser that went in from a corner at the start of the game, but it was correctly ruled out for offside. But there were so many like set pieces that Jubilo would always win. And under Ficcadenti, there's no chance that any team would be creating that many chances from set pieces. So I don't know what Hasegawa's doing, because he's not really improving them going forward either. They've only scored 8 goals. It was a nicely worked goal that they score here through Mateus in the end, although the goalkeeper sells himself a little bit as he rushes out towards Morrister. But they're not going improved going forward, and they're even worse. They're really bad defensively now. And it's looking like I'm not going to be that surprised if Nagoya are in a relegation battle this season, and that was unfathomable for the last couple of years.
Yeah, it's obviously a lot of heavy hitters down in the bottom six after 10 match days. We've got Urawa, Gunma, and Nagoya just outside the drop zone. And then, of course, Kobe at rock bottom. So, yeah, four teams that might have had designs on a top six finish or better. And, yes, they all find themselves in the bottom six well over a quarter of the way through the season. Grampus were, yeah, well and truly caught cold here. Yuki Otsu, well, yeah, he's he won't have had a better 65 seconds, I think, in his entire career. And he couldn't believe it. And he was absolutely loving life. And fair play to him. Yes, the great fantasy points provider Yuto Suzuki was yes, the assister for the match winner. So that was something that bailed my team out over the course of this match day 10, which otherwise yeah, points were at a premium for me at least. But yeah, for Iwata, it's yeah, terrific. And they're up to 12th in the table. Not obviously a lot of breathing room outside the drop zone, but yeah, for now, them and their supporters can enjoy a yeah, a much needed and ultimately yeah, a very eventful home victory over Grampus. And yes, that leaves us with S-Pulse's home game against Hiroshima on Friday to finish off the match day 10 slate. Yeah, the Nihondara faithful were celebrating on a couple of occasions when they took the lead in this game, but on both occasions they were pegged back by Sanfrecce and the game ended 2-2. Thiago Santana, yeah, got both of the goals for S-Pulse. But they were pegged back first by Tsukasa Morishima and then with the 10 minutes to go by Yoshifumi Kashiwa. We've said that Hiroshima have been much improved in recent weeks, Sam, that's seen them move into the top half of the table after obviously they were down in the drop zone for the first few weeks. I don't know, what did you make of this? Another frustrating result at the end of the day for S-Pulse, though, isn't it? It's a fourth straight draw, and yeah, after taking the lead twice, their supporters would have dearly loved for them to hang on here.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it comes down to the first half where they absolutely dominated the game. And they got their goal, they took the lead, but they just didn't go on and get that second or third goal. And it allowed Hiroshima back into it in the second half. I thought first half, though, S-Pulse played really well. Thiago Santana back into the lineup. He works that line really well. He's a nuisance for everyone. They didn't pick him up for his goal. And yeah, I think maybe pairing with Osei Hun might be slightly better. I mean, I like Yuta Suzuki, and he does drop deep, and he is quite a nuisance. But I just think Osei Hun, I've really been really impressed with the bits I've seen of him. So, but there are still lots of options for Shimizu. But yeah, as I say, they didn't take their chances. They allowed Hiroshima in. They made two changes at the break. They brought Shiatane back into midfield. He really helped them in there. And then new signing now, Nassim Ben Khalifa came on up front. They really hope that he will take to the league and do a little bit better than Junior Santos, who had missed one chance in the first half. He's not quite fit, I don't think, Ben Khalifa. I don't think he's played since February. And looking back on his history, he's had at least two cruciate knee ligament injuries. So they're going to have to be like treat him with kick gloves or kitten gloves or whatever that phrase is. there is a phrase in there, but they've got to look after him. That's the word. That's what I'll say. But his movement was pretty decent. He didn't have too many chances to score, but he looked reasonable. Hopefully, there's just an improvement on what they have. But generally speaking, second half they did look a lot better because he combined with Morishima and Mitsuta, and Kashiwa had a very good game as well on that left hand side, as did Fuji on the right. So they really came into it. They definitely deserve their equaliser. They probably could have had a couple of goals before then. They were stung immediately by Shimizu, but that was kind of the only thing Shimizu did in the second half, because it was a generally like the old cliche game of two halves, all Shimizu first half, mostly Hiroshima in the second. They probably could have won it as well towards the end. Kashiwa had a decent chance right at the end of it, but couldn't convert on target. I think Mitsuta had also had a reasonable effort. So yeah, it was a very exciting game. Both teams played well during periods, and Shimizu was still in that relegation places, but I do keep thinking there's enough about them to get themselves out of it. But then you look at the three teams ahead of them, Rara, Gamba and Nagoya, okay, maybe not, but yeah, they're both going to be really exciting teams to watch for this season. And yeah, I think Shimizu, the way they play, I think they will get out of it. And Hiroshima, yeah, I've liked pretty much everything I've seen from them in the last month or two.
Yeah, Michael Skibber's got them turned around quite nicely, and that's, yeah, it's very good to see. And, well, they'll look to continue Kashiwa's recent struggles on Tuesday when, yeah, Race will visit the Edion Stadium in match day 11. So, yeah, that's all of the seven games from Thursday and Friday wrapped up. Yes, the last one, frustration for S-Pol supporters. But as you say, Sam, yeah, Kashiwa could have won it for Hiroshima with literally the last kick of the game. So, yeah, that would have been a really deflating moment for S-Pulse and their supporters had he managed to get his shot on target. So ultimately, yes, the spoils were shared a point apiece at Nihon Daira. And, well, yeah, as we said, Hiroshima host Kashiwa on Tuesday. And you mentioned it earlier, it's a battle of the bottom when, yeah, Shonan host Shimizu, that's second from bottom, hosting a third from bottom. And elsewhere, Sam, the seven games on, well, six on Tuesday and then one on Wednesday as we await the league return of the four ACL clubs coming up on the weekend. So, I don't know, it's pretty slim pickings as far as really exciting looking games on paper go, isn't it? I don't know. Is it Kashima Iwata, maybe two winners from this past match day going at it? The new league leaders, as we said, looking to extend their advantage on top, or yeah, what's your pick of the seven games? Well, I guess the six on Tuesday for a neutral who might want to tune in.
Yeah, it's a difficult one. I think Kashima Jubilo should be a decent game. I mean, there's an historic rivalry, I suppose, to it. I don't think it's a particularly one at the moment in recent years. But, yeah, Kashima are always interesting to watch. And Jubilo, yeah, they cause problems to everyone at the moment. Not necessarily playing particularly great football throughout the entire 90 minutes, but they keep themselves in it. So, yeah, who knows? Hiroshima Kashima is probably the game I'm most looking forward to. I think it'd be the most open. I think, yeah, as a neutral, that would be the one I would go after. But I think the biggest one has to be the Patreon derby between Avispa and FC Tokyo.
Well, yeah, I guess Avispa back to winning ways now. And, yeah, both of these teams are remembering how to score goals in the match day 10. So, yes, we'll wait and see how it pans out at the Best Denki Stadium on, yes, Tuesday evening. It's a 5 o'clock kickoff. It's the late game on Tuesday. So, yeah, we'll wait and see. Should be an interesting one. And then, before we move on to match day 12, Sam, you will be able to provide one of your patented written reviews for our patrons of the midweek action.
Yeah, they are very nicely spread out. So there's only three games happening at a time, I think. There is a crossover, I suppose, with five games on the Tuesday for half of it. But yeah, it's generally nicely spread out. So I should be able to get Tuesdays out on Tuesday evening, and then I'll add in and I'll throw Gamba versus Sapporo your way at some point on Wednesday.
Very nice then, and yes, that will be added on for the patrons to peruse once that game is done and dusted on the Wednesday, Gamba and Sapporo. And then starting on Friday, we have a match day 12, and that does see the return of the four ACL clubs to J1 action. A couple of interesting looking games. Sam, I wonder how Gamba versus Kobe will go on Sunday afternoon. That's going to be a fascinating Kansai derby. And indeed, Tokyo host Tosu at Ajinomoto Stadium on the Sunday. Sagan have a terrific record, both home and away, against Tokyo in recent seasons. So they're very much a bogey team for the capital club. So that shapes as a really interesting game. And, it's back to the grind for the ACL clubs, and it'll be interesting to see how they adapt back to top flight action.
Yeah, it will be. And that one you picked out, Gamba Kobe, is the one I'd be looking out for. Kobe, and you straight into a derby, straight into an away fixture. It's going to be difficult for them. They have to start winning. I mean, 4 points, they're already 6 points off safety. They can't afford a slow start back into the league. I mean, Gamba, if you were to pick a team, maybe you'd want to play Gamba, but not necessarily away in a derby fixture. The old cliche, form out the window and all that. But yeah, that's a really interesting one. I think, generally speaking, they've all got fairly interesting games, the ACL clubs. Kashiwa, who knows what happens in midweek, but yeah, they could be out of four in the league, I suppose, Urawa against Kashua. But I expect Urawa to take a 3 points away at Kashua. It should be a really open game. And then Yokohama and Nagoya, I mean, it's not the team Nagoya really want to be facing when they're struggling defensively. So, yeah, very interesting fixtures this weekend. But, yeah, that Kansai derby, I think, would be my pick of the round.
Yeah, I imagine both sets of supporters will be watching through their fingers because, yeah, obviously Gumbo haven't been in great form to start the season themselves. But, yeah, Kobe just absolutely desperate for some points. What would they give for a victory away at one of their local rivals? I guess we're presuming that Andres Iniesta will be back in the lineup, Sam, after he appears to have taken a break while his teammates were slogging away over in the ACL. So I don't know whether there was an injury behind Iniesta staying back or not, but we'll wait and see. And hopefully for Vissel supporters, he'll be back in the lineup for that away game against Gumba. And yes, we'll be back on our regularly scheduled podcasting release dates for you next week, listeners, after recording a day earlier than usual this week. Due to Golden Week, we'll be back in action after match day 12, where with a full round of results to fill you in on. So interesting times for us to catch up on a Sunday night. Again, it's Golden Week here, so it just feels like the weekend anyway. But enjoy the football, I guess. F Marinos are kicking off as we speak, so enjoy that game. We've got our fingers crossed for them, obviously. And we're looking forward to your written review of midweek, and I'm looking forward to catching up with you again next week.
Yeah, look forward to it. I mean, the Marinos game has already started well for Marinos. They're 1-0 up the great goal scorer Anderson Lopez on the score sheet, so that's a great start for them. So hopefully that's a good sign of things to come for this week, and we have a really good week of football.
Wow, terrific stuff. All right, that's great news for F Maridos and their supporters. Hope that result holds all the way through. Okay, so that is it for this week's episode of the J-Talk podcast. Sam and I would like to thank all of our patrons for their ongoing support on Patreon. If you'd like to get involved, please visit patreon.com/JTalkPod. And listeners, of course, we'd like to thank you for listening wherever you are. We'll be back next week to round up J1 Match Day 12. Speak to you next week. Bye for now.
The J-Talk Podcast.